this is Don Bluth, and you're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 79, An American Tale. How many bands have a thunder tube? To the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. We're your hosts, Morgan Stradling, Chelsea Robinson, and Mason Smith. I love today, we're going to talk about a Don Bluth film.
Don Bluth alert, Don Bluth alert.
For those of you who are new to the show, we are the Rotoscopers, and this is the Animation Addicts Podcast, the place where we talk about all things animation, past and present. We review a movie every single episode, and we're right in the middle of our Rats and Mice series. So we're focusing on films where rats and or mice are the main characters. Last time we did The Great Mouse Detective, and this time we are doing An American Tale by the great Don Bluth / Steven Spielberg. So pretty exciting, because we're kind of a Bluth hardcore fans over here. Let's just put it that way.
Yep.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
I'm making keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Bravo Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Bravo Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Bravo Bros.
Good job.
All about that Bluth.
So let's jump into our main discussion. This episode, we are doing Don Bluth's film, An American Tale. We did a poll on the website, and we listed a variety of different films that had mice as the main characters, and this was one of the top most requested. So people out there are also Don Bluth fans, and they're excited to hear us talk about it. So let's go into a little history for those of the uninitiated.
So Don Bluth broke away from Disney. His very first film was Secret of Nim. Now that wasn't like super financially successful, but it was very critically acclaimed. Like people really liked it. And you talk to people even today and they're just like, oh my gosh, Secret of Nim is fantastic. Cause it is. And that's why that one will also be on our Rats and Mice series. But anyway, Steven Spielberg saw the film and he was extremely impressed as well. And he actually contacted Don and Don was and said, wanted to see if he would want to make a picture with him. So American Tale was the very first one. Here's a funny little tidbit. Is the main character, whose name is Feifel, as we know, was actually originally was going to be Mousky Mouskowitz. But Steven Spielberg came in one day and said that his name was going to be Feifel. And Don and his team asked why. And Steven said that he'd got the name because it was the name of his Russian grandfather. He was telling the story of this real person who had come through Ellis Island to become one American. And Don ended up saying in an interview later on that it took on a whole different color for them when it became that personal. So that was a really cool, interesting tidbit, I thought.
Yeah, totally. I thought that was a really cool story. So it was supposed to... Mousky, Mouskowitz. That's catchy. Oh,
totally.
Catchy. That's a real zinger. But I'm glad that Spielberg stepped in, and it's so cool that he had his own personal touch. This isn't just, an animated comedy, dramedy about animated mice. It's in the background, it's actually the story, as it were, of Steven Spielberg's own grandfather, is what you're saying, who was named Fievel. And that's just cool.
Yeah.
That's just cool. They put their heart and soul into it. Give a little bit of heart and soul. And, so Amblimation, that was part of Steven Spielberg's Amblim Entertainment. And you know Amblim from, they made Land Before Time. They made Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And then Amblimation was started in 1989. And so that was like their attempt at making like a strict animation studio. And so technically under Amblimation, there's only three films. Even though Amblin made animated films. So it's kind of complicated, but three films, American Tail in 1991, then 2 years later, We're Back, and then 1995, Balto. So with this podcast, we've actually we've completed the Amblimation saga, unless you count the television series.
That's probably the first time we've ever been able to cover all the movies that a specific studio has done. I'm so impressed.
We haven't even done Toy Story 3, and we've done all of Amblimation. Anyway,
they work with the theme.
You know what's crazy? The American. Oh yeah, we have to work with the theme. With the theme, this is like a theme within a theme.
Ooh.
Because we did dogs, we did dragons and dinos, and now we're doing rats. So within our Chinese zodiac, we've inadvertently done the Amblimation zodiac. That doesn't work, but Amblimation Studios. You know what's crazy? That an American Tail grossed like $65 million, just thereabouts. And it blew Word Back and Balto out of the water. It was extremely successful. Maybe it was that Don Bluth touch.
Ooh, that Don Bluth dazzle.
Oh, man. There's a fair amount of dazzle, Don Bluth dazzle in this film.
Definitely.
So, yeah, if you want to play animation studio trivia, this is Amblimation, not necessarily Amblin Entertainment, but it's all in the same thing. What you need to know is that it was Don Bluth directed, but Steven Spielberg co-produced it, and it has Don DeLuise in it. So what else do you need to know?
Well, I have some just random facts and tidbits about the release. So the budget for this film, originally Bluth agreed for a $6.5 million budget, which, of course, they always grow. So it ended up being around $9 million when it all said and done, which is about $3 million less than what Disney was producing at the time. So, that was kind of one of his selling points, is that he's able to produce it cheaper. And it ended up making, like Mason said, it was rather successful and made $84.5 million, which was quite commendable at the time. But, one of the reasons why he was able to produce this slightly cheaper was because the Sullivan Bluth studio were non-unionized, and so they were able to, let me just read what it says.
They didn't demand higher wages, let's just say that.
Yes.
Well, and you saw there was only like 10 of them.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, it's like the animators, 6 of them and then 6 of them. So, yeah, it was a very small crew.
Yeah, and since the studio was mostly non-union, many workers attempted to withdraw from the union, which got the union upset, and there was a battle between Bluth and the union and for the whole production of the film. I know, this is typical Don Bluth. He loves to just disrupt. I mean, in the early 80s, 70s, he pulled away from Disney, he completely disrupted, and here he's disrupting the union, and it continued for the whole production of the film, and this is kind of one of the reasons why they were compelled to move the studio to Ireland, because they felt that it was much more supportive of an atmosphere to make a film without having the union constantly on your back. So, yes, that is that.
That is that. When they moved the whole thing to Ireland, did they get, like, free voice acting for all the Irish mice in this film?
I think they moved they didn't move production of American Tail to Ireland, but future films.
Gotcha. Cool. So.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
513, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We are the real Brady Bros. Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg and who were you again?
I played Peter.
We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
This holiday season, Universal Pictures brings you a very special motion picture experience. The first animated feature film presented by Steven Spielberg. An American Tale. The story of one family's journey to America and Fievel, their son, who got lost along the way.
Fievel!
An American Tale, a Don Bluth film, coming this Thanksgiving.
Papa!
So this was actually my first time watching An American Tale.
Oh, so give us your thoughts.
Well, I had watched Fievel Goes West when I was really young, like 6 years old. I barely remember it. I'll give my general thoughts at the end when I do my rating, but I came into the film knowing that it was Don Bluth. And so I was excited about that. It definitely was not what I expected. And I went into this film dry. I had never like even discussed this film or the characters or like even read a synopsis of the plot. So I was an initiate, as we say. And so I was excited about that. I thought the film was going to start in space. I rented on Amazon and I was watching it. It did the Universal Studios logo and it did another Universal Studios from the 80s, but it started out in space and then zoomed in on the Universal logo. And I was like, wait, is there like Space Mouse? is it going to be like space, the final frontier? But before it was the American frontier. I don't know. I don't know.
You should be a filmmaker. I like your ideas.
I should.
Yeah, it was really funny to me because you start off and you think it's space and then there it is space, but then there's snowflakes and they almost look like stop motion snowflakes in a way. And I'm just sitting here. I'm like, are we watching Frozen? I think we are. I think we're watching Frozen. It was just a really interesting way to start the film with these snowflakes because like the snowflake motif wasn't necessarily an important part of the film. It just had something to do with something at the very beginning. It was set during winter. But yes. I thought that was an interesting way to introduce the film with the floating snowflake.
Yeah, yeah. You said, well, you hit the nail on the head about my thoughts on the film. This film, American Tale, is very chronological and it flies by the seat of its pants a lot. And so, yes, it will have random things like, hey, this is a snowflake. It's so magical. But the film has nothing to do with snowflakes. We just wanted to show you something cool.
Yeah.
Russia, you know. Yeah. But it did have that typical, you know, that classic Don Bluth intro with the magic stuff. And then the choir in the back is like, ooh, you know.
Well, I don't know if that's typically
the Don Bluth chorus, everyone.
I don't know if that's typically him, but it is James Horner. Like a lot of the things that come in, because James Horner, this was obviously the first time that they'd worked with him, but they went on to work with him later on for, as we all know and love, The Land Before Time, as well as other things. But
right.
Like it's so distinctly him. And the moment it started, I'm like, oh, this is, I feel like this is a James Horner. And it was, it made me happy.
See, you are so smart with those music facts. Like, I hardly know anything about music in animated film.
Well, honestly, I haven't really begun to pay attention until I started doing the podcast. And then I started, you know, adding in all of the music for all the different movies. And, you know, because you go through, you have to listen to all of them. And you're like, you start picking up on some things.
And she also became, you know, dubbed the official music person.
Right.
So now really I really had to know her stuff.
Well, that's true.
And, you sing and songs? Y'all... You must love everything about music.
Oh, what like, okay, I have to keep up with track sounds. They're a lot cooler than I am.
So Don Bluth film, if you notice in the opening credits, it says Don Bluth about 20 times. I mean, it really is his film.
Yeah.
I mean, we get it already. I'm just kidding. And there's Dom DeLuise. I saw him in the credits, so I was like, oh, I knew that Tiger was voiced by Dom DeLuise because I remember Tiger's character from Five Goes West. So I was excited about that. Did you know on Don Bluth's Wikipedia page, there's a chart that has all of his go-to people and if they're included in each Don Bluth film?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Dom DeLuise is one of the rows, and on the columns it has all the movies, and he's like in like all of them. But yeah, it's worth a look.
But who doesn't love Dom?
He's so great.
He really is. This time I was listening to like his laugh, and it's just so funny because he's like. He's just like so shallow.
You know what's so great about him is that he cracks himself up all the time. And it makes him laugh even more. It makes us laugh. And so everybody's just laughing and carrying on about this vegetarian cat, you know? So yeah, the music was great. And then you get, this wasn't the most, okay, on a dazzle scale of one to dazzle, I say this is more of a razzle frazzle than a dazzle.
One to Anastasia.
Yeah, on a scale of one to Rockadoodle, there's not a whole lot of dazzle, but it is in some scenes.
A lot of,
you know,
the
that typical,
snow
you know, shine a light through the cell, and yeah. So there's a couple of scenes like when Fievel is on, he's in the glass bottle floating on the ocean, and he has that huge moment where he sees the Statue of Liberty in all its pre-green goodness, and there's a ton of dazzle out on that, you know, golden shore of New York City.
It's true. That's one of the things. I mean, we've talked about this before, but this Don Bluth dazzle, I know we say it jokingly, but it really, he has a feel to his films in the way that, you know, sometimes he's able to create sort of this feeling of, you know, texture or light in the air and just the way that it's reflecting off really, the people.
Yeah. He really went for making magic, a magical film. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his shtick was always for family friendly entertainment. We've like argued this on several episodes about how family friendly his movies are. It's like, you know, when people talk about there was a glimmer in his eye, you know, there was a twinkle in his eye. Well, all of his films are just a twinkle in the eye of the film.
Yeah.
Am I getting too poetic for you guys? But that's what I'm trying to say is it's got this like twinkly magical quality.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, it's a dead giveaway that's Don Bluth.
One of my favorite things is if you ever go and listen to the audio commentary on any of the DVDs that they've had come in, so funny. So, so funny. But like most of the time he ends up talking about the lighting, the texturing, how he puts it, the larger studios were not doing this type of thing at that point because it was too expensive. But we didn't. We found the way to get around that. The quote unquote larger studios. Yes. There's only one at that point.
So I only really remember two parts from this movie when I think about it. It's the very beginning where their family is together and they're, you know, talking and whatnot. And then the song Somewhere Out There. And I guess in my mind, I thought those were the same scene because I thought that Somewhere Out There, the song was sung very early in the film. So as I was watching, I was very surprised that it wasn't until more of the middle. But man, I really don't remember anything from this movie. I mean, I hadn't watched it in 10 plus, 15 plus years, and it just wasn't one that I owned or, you know, really had an affinity for that I wanted to watch it all the time. So it was interesting to watch it this perspective, knowing the basics about the movie, but not necessarily knowing how it was going to get there.
That was kind of me too. I mean, you had mentioned that you often remember like the opening of the credits and everything. I'd never remembered any of the opening. When it was starting, I was like, have I ever seen this movie? I know I have, but I don't remember this at all. And the scenes that I remember are the ones with the bird. I didn't even remember at all the secret weapon. I just,
no.
Like, there's just so many parts that I had no idea. And like the whole time I'm thinking, wasn't Tiger supposed to be in this? Where's Tiger?
Right.
It was the same thing. I grew up watching the sequel and I knew that one by heart. I love that movie. And, So this one, I'd remembered parts of it, but I was like, oh, okay. Something kind of new-ish, but not.
So we start out and we see the Moskowitz family and, you know, we see the title over their door and then, oh, humans. Oh, zoop. Nope. This isn't about humans. Camera, pan down. And so you go down to mice level and you see that, no, we're not going to learn about the Moskowitz family. We're going to learn about the Mouskowitz family. And this is funny because this is something that they typically do in animated films about mice. I know originally they wanted the film to be sort of set in an all anthropomorphic world, sort of like Robin Hood. But rather, I think Don Bluth suggested, well, did you see the rescuers? And the rescuers, they kind of live underneath the humans, and I think we should do it that way. And that's what they ultimately did. And the same year that this movie came out, a few months prior, The Great Mouse Detective came out, and they used the exact same world underneath the world mechanic, which has really become sort of instrumental to mice film. And it makes sense because they're so small and they live in holes and walls. I mean, they could have a world with that, you know, of their own that sort of mimics and mirrors our own. But it's just funny that that was the way that they took it. And I like it. You know, it shows that you may be paying attention to the world you're a part of, but there's other things, you know, below you or around you that if you're not paying attention, you're going to miss.
Yeah, totally. So it is very Great Mouse Detective, you know, where I wouldn't say it's quite rescuers, because in rescuers, they had direct contact with the humans and they were involved in the affairs of muggles. Mm-hmm. I mean, humans. And then in this one, it's just kind of a parallel story.
Yeah.
I mean, besides getting hosed down by the fire hoses, that mice don't really interact with the humans, I guess. Oh, no, except for that one part. Oh, where she's like, oh, my word, a mouse!
Yeah.
That one part.
That was Chelsea.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You don't like mice. And the little Mouskowitz family, I guess it's Hanukkah. That's what I overheard. They're exchanging gifts.
Okay, because I was confused because I was like, why is everyone getting a gift? It's like Oprah.
You all Russia, the gifts everyone for you. In Russia, it's tradition to have a gift exchange every night.
Well, there we go. And tonight's you got the hat and the girl get? The bonnet, yes.
Kind of a bonnet.
Yeah. Russian bonnet.
There's a little bit of Russian culture that's going on here. Because it's Hanukkah, so everybody's given gifts. He gets his little hat.
Which has been passed down by generations.
Oh, and the first thing he says, he like complains about it. What does he say?
He's such a little snot. He's like, it's too big.
He's like, well, you're a growing sweet comrade. I don't know. In America, they have holes in all the walls. Yeah. And then, I don't know, the audio for this film is kind of crazy, but there's like this random part for 5 seconds before the cats show up where like, I think it's the Cossacks come in and they just start shooting people. And there's a couple of people who get shot on camera. And I don't know if Don Bluth thought that we would notice, but I noticed. So anyway, it's just a little bit of Eastern European strife going on. And of course, here come the cats. And my gosh, those are no ordinary cats.
They're like pumped up on some type of, I don't know, crazy.
They're like Terminator cats.
It's true.
Clearly never been to Russia because of it's how Russian cats roll.
Well, I wanted a Russian blue for forever. Now I'm having second thoughts. But, I mean, those cats are like, I don't know. Those are like the cats I imagine, like, Oakland Raiders fans owning. And then they're just horrible. They want to eat all the mice, and they're all slobbery, and they don't even sound like cats. They sound like lions, which are cats.
Yeah.
They don't sound like, you know, kitties.
Yeah, the snarls were the most terrifying part.
Ooh, snarls indeed.
So speaking of cats, like as they're, you know, right before this happens, they're singing songs of there are no cats in America and the streets are paved with cheese. And yeah, exactly. It's really funny because this is one of those rumors that people hear, you know, in, you know, the hearsay. I'm an ocean separates us, so I can't really verify, but that's what I've heard. But so are cats. Is it a literal thing? I mean, I know it is literal. They think there are no cats in America, but is this also supposed to be, you know, figurative of something?
Well, at that time, you know, that was something that was really, you know, spot on about this movie is like what you were saying. Like everybody's got a cousin in America and everybody's has received these letters about how amazing America is. And so they're just they pump it up in their mind thinking this is the end all place. And, you know, it's in that same interview that I was talking about earlier, it said that Don Bluth made it a point, and he said, like, anybody who has ever hoped for the American dream knows exactly what it means for there to be, quote, no cats in America. And they know exactly what kind of cheese they would hope that their streets would be paved with. And, you know, it's pretty crazy. I mean, it was a really good metaphor, I thought, because it's just like, that's exactly what everybody is hoping for, this perfect world where everything is, I guess in some way, you could see it as everything is, you know, grass is always greener on the other side. But at the same time, like, it was a lot better than, you know, other areas at that time. You know, one of the biggest things is, like, you can say whatever you want anywhere. And at, you know, they're like, don't say cat. Don't say that. Don't say that. But you can go to America and you can say that. And that's not something you're going to ever be, you know, cut off for, which in that period of time in those areas, it was. And anyway, it talks about that this film is very palatable for children, you know, because, you know, it also, they're able to understand the fact that there's no cats in America. It's that both literal and figurative spot.
Yeah. I think what it was is that their cats, if you go online, you can find like debates on IMDb. Some say that the cats were meant to be communists. I don't necessarily agree that that was the symbol he was going for. But I think what it comes down
there
to is
there are no communists in America.
Oh, what a great song. <That'd be> great.
The classics.
Someone should make a... Never mind. Yeah, and this is like the McCarthy version of... Anyway, yeah, so no cats in America. So I guess it's because the cats are the major obstacle to the survival and success of these little mices. These mice, like in Secret of Nim. Mm-hmm. And...
Well, it's like there's no problems in America. Cats are our biggest problem are the cats. And right. The cheese that we want is our, you know, that's the American dream. That's no, there's no obstacles. And we have everything is in front of us. All of the opportunity.
I prefer aged cheddar. And
Havarti is actually my favorite.
Oh, well, pretty good. I like how the cats get significantly less menacing as the film goes on. Because by the time Fievel goes down the drain and stumbles upon the cat bar, you know, the marauders, mm-hmm. They're not like savage, horrible beasts, you know? Mm-hmm. They're just crooks. They're just like gangsters. Thugs. Anyway.
I didn't notice that, but like, I kind of like that. I mean, just how you're talking about that this film kind of goes by the seat of its pants a lot and just kind of evolves. It's like...
That's a nice way to put it. It just evolves on itself.
Yeah. You can kind of see it as though it's coming from Fievel. It's from his outlook. And so everything, the whole world will evolve around you as you grow and as you learn more.
Yeah. I like when they're on the boat and for one, mice always have to step in time to some like imaginary or otherwise beat. Did you notice that? Like when Fievel first hooks up with that crook mouse, you know, who's not really a mouse. Ah, spoiler alert. Sorry. And, and they're marching off and it's like, who's playing the music? Cause they're just like stepping in time, best buddies, barely know this guy. Fievel has stranger issues.
he did not learn Stranger Danger.
Right. He did not. Maybe they didn't teach that in Mother Russia. I also like when they're on the ship, they're singing, you know, no cats in America, blah, blah, blah. I like how all the mice from all their different countries have like these elaborate like sets built all of a sudden and costumes, et cetera, for the song. Like on a boat, did they just bring it all? Was there like a playwright mouse?
Oh, they like knew there was going to be a big song.
I know, because the Italian mouse is like, ooh, with the cats in the Maya country, you know, and then there's like this elaborate set and stuff.
It's really gruesome, though. Like each one of them are talking about how, yes, I woke up.
Oh, the Irish
and I was,
guy.
Well, all of them, though. Like, yeah. Is when the dad comes up and he's just like, yes, and then I woke up and I was an orphan. I was like, holy crap. But these were all like the problems that were very involved in their life. I'm like, yes, cats are problems.
This movie's real, yo.
it's real, dog. Straight up, G.
So, okay, moving on to, let's talk about like the characters. Obviously the future film is named after the main character, Fievel. Did you like him? Did you find him endearing? Did you like him as a main character?
Nope. They tried too hard with him. Hey, this film is real. I'm going to be real.
Yeah, I didn't warm up to him. I warmed up to the dad, though.
Yeah, you know what's weird is I kind of emoted more with the dad than with Fievel. Like, okay, Fievel's story is a sobby story.
But he did it to himself.
He did it to himself because he was a little chump. And maybe because I learned Stranger Danger. I don't know. The whole conflict of him being lost is very frustrating to me watching this film because they did it in this kind of willy-nilly way. Like, on the one hand, you've got your typical Don Bluth theme of putting main characters through horrific mortal danger constantly for about 80 minutes. And this is supposed to be a kid's movie. And then on the other hand, the whole structure of him having lost his parents is so frustrating because there are scenes when he's literally like 3 feet away from his parents and all they have to do is like turn around. But it's like, nope, they're just going to walk past each other because they're being blocked by this rickshaw that's being pulled or a wagon. I don't know. You know what I mean? There's several situations where Fievel is looking for his parents and like one story up is his family mm-hmm. or yeah, down below where he's walking is his family looking for him. And they keep that going, and then I mean I've got problems with the pacing of the ending, but it's just kind of this tease. Maybe I don't like being teased. Maybe I have teasing issues. Yes, exactly. Yeah, I like the dad though. The dad was very like squash and stretchy. He was like a nice Stromboli. He was like a nice Stromboli that probably bathed more.
Well, it's funny you
saying a lot
that.
Because he's a rat.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because in the designs of the film, they typically, you know, the film prior was a lot more angular, a little bit more modern of a design, but they specifically right. went back to the very rounded Disney, you know, designs of the 30s and 40s, you know, Pinocchio. I mean, yeah. I remember just recently I was watching something and it was going back and forth between Sleeping Beauty and Pinocchio. And Pinocchio, wow, because everything's super round and cuddly and just lovable in a way. It really contrasted with Sleeping Beauty and some of the later films. But that was a style choice that they did for this movie. They kind of wanted to create a nostalgia because baby boomers at the time were very nostalgic for things of their past and their childhood. And it worked well because it endeared audiences to the design. And he actually got praises from critics throwing back to that old school style. So I thought it was interesting that was one of the highlights of the film.
Yeah, it is funny how they went with different character design because Secret of Nim wasn't it pretty much the movie before this one?
Yes.
As far as Don Bluth goes. Yeah, and the character designs and stuff are so different. Yes. So that's definitely, that was something I noticed. I was like, there's not a lot of nimness going on here. Nobody's nimming.
But it still feels very Don Bluth. When I was watching, I was like, yep, these are his designs. These are his characters.
It does. Yeah. Constant mortal danger. A lot of effort went into the animation because around that time, television was doing a lot of what's called limited animation. And that's kind of a broad term, but it basically means like very cheaply done animation where you're reusing a lot of cells and you use a lot of blur effects to get from pose A to pose B. Like Tex Avery and Chuck Jones did it a lot. And not necessarily a bad thing as far as like Looney Tunes is concerned because it worked for them, but Don Bluth wanted to make it a point that they were really putting a lot of work into this. I think there's a story about him like showing a stack of TV cells and it only went so high up and then he stacked up all the cells and drawings of a similar sequence in for American Tail and it went up to his head or something. It was like
yeah, I remember
really tall.
That. It was like,
of course, Don Bluth's very short, so keep that in mind. But but it was significantly more work. I guess Don Bluth can also be known for his effort. Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's like a common theme, which is a ton of effort into these films. But at the same time, trying to make it cheaper and making it appealing to producers that way. Mm-hmm. Very complicated guy. We should get him on another interview.
Let's definitely.
Be like, say, Donnie.
We're a lot better interviewers now.
We have better sound quality.
Yes. Okay, so they're on the ship. They're on the ship and Fievel has to go after his hat.
He throws it out there. It's his own fault.
What a jerk!
Oh, this is what got me frustrated. That's why I don't feel so much remorse for him because I'm like, you did it to yourself. There's this crazy storm and you purposely went out there. Good luck.
We don't know the age conversion from mouse years, for Fievel. How old is he supposed to be?
He seems five or six.
Because he also has this, Yeah, yeah. He also has this line where he's like, fishes! You know, so he remembers his dad's conversation. I was wondering where that conversation was going in that one scene. And so he goes off to find the fishes, and boy, does he go swimming with the fishes. Mm-hmm. And so I guess it's that, but he was also a little chump, but he's like, I'm looking for my hat! You know, he just throws it off the boat. Oh my gosh. Then we get trippy.
Yeah.
Then we get real trippy, because those waves turn into, like, Night on Bald Mountain waves.
Well, apparently it was supposed to be even more gruesome and a bit more hardcore, but it was cut back because it was deemed too scary. And I'm like, well, they kind of went there. I wish they would have just kept going there.
The edge.
It was interesting because for the most part, this film's pretty, I mean, I understand the characters are mice, but it's pretty realistic in what it pushes as far as, you know, the boundaries of physics and whatnot. But, that was just kind of the allegory, sort of the devil from All Dogs Go to Heaven. You know,
yes.
He likes to have things that are very figurative.
Oh yeah, that
I guess.
Guy. Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought of. That and like a creepy Fantasia.
Yeah, and also creepy like owl prophecy guy in Secret of NIMH.
Ah, yes, Nicodemus. Mm-hmm.
Nicodemus, right?
No, not Nicodemus. Nicodemus is pretty creepy too. But yeah, owl.
Yeah, there's like freaky characters. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was pleasantly surprised at that. And that was all like 2D animated, so that like cool water demon effect. Effort right there. And so Fievel's dad's behavior after he gets lost, I shouldn't be so hard on him. Maybe this is his way of coping with it, but he just kind of like switches it off. He's just like, Fievel's gone. He's gone. You know, the sister's like, I don't know. I still have a feeling, you know, that Fievel could be out there. And the mom's like, it'll go away. Don't worry. It has for us.
Oh,
we're already thinking about having other kids. And I don't know, but not quite. But the dad's just like, he's gone. There are thousands of Fievel Mouskowitz in New York City.
The dad like, is very much like Basil, where he's a roller coaster emotionally.
Oh, ye of little faith. Yeah, totally. And I love immigration. They're like, what's your name again? Okay, Mr. Smith. And I'm like, hey, thanks, careless immigration people. Now we'll never get our genealogy done. But but yeah, and then what did they change the daughter's name to something else?
Tilly.
Right, so she's no longer Tanya. How hard is Tanya? And then
exactly.
There's even more madness that ensues because Fievel and his stranger danger issues shows up an orphan on the shores of New York City. The first person he meets is a total stranger, and he lets him take him to his house and bathe him. So Fievel, you've been really lucky this whole film.
Mm-hmm.
You're lucky it's a lovable French bird and not like a creepazoid. A bird who's like building the Statue of Liberty. Did I miss something in history?
Yeah, I was kind of lost at that.
Well, he was supposed to be representative of the kind of the artist who built the Statue of Liberty, but he's supposed to be the mice world's version. So the Statue of Liberty.
Then how come he didn't make a mouse of Liberty?
Well, he was making something else, wasn't he? He wasn't making a Statue of Liberty. I thought he was making another statue.
No, I thought it was the Statue of Liberty.
No.
I thought he was just like, overseeing it.
There was a little.
Like, I gotta make sure this.
I thought
done.
There was a little statue to the side that he was constructing.
Oh, maybe I totally missed it.
Yeah, because it was like covered in like.
Well, it should. Yeah, it's French because the.
Oui,
French
oui, I am Henri.
Yeah, because the sculptor of the Statue of Liberty is Frederick Auguste Bartholdi, and so he was supposed to kind of be like their version. Like everything in our world parallels their world, kind of, and he was
okay,
just
so
their version.
Right, he was working on his own mousy statue then, right? Or
yes.
Animal statue. Okay, I totally didn't catch that. Maybe I was on my potty break at that point. Yeah, so he shows up, and it's a good thing Henry's such a nice guy. And then he teaches him to never say never.
Which is a funny song in itself, but definitely I feel like Justin Bieber got some inspiration from those lyrics because he totally ripped off Don Bluth.
Yeah. Totally Little Biebs definitely grew up with American Tail then.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt that. But yeah.
They have American Tail in Canada. Can you watch movies about America in Canada? Anyway. And then there's the bird Bimbettes that show up. The French pigeon ladies.
They were the original Bimbettes.
Oh.
Which, like, speaking of Bimbettes, there are, if you see the Book of Life, there are Bimbettes in that
Bimbettes.
Movie. Yes, there's probably about four or five of them, opposed to just the three, but they're the ones who are like fawning over the hero and very disappointed when he's getting married or whatnot.
Over El Gran Channing Tatum. Yeah. All right, cool. So, yeah, we got Birdman Betts. And then things happen so fast. It's like it feels like the very next scene, he falls and he lands right in the lap, basically, of bad guy Mouse, Warren T. Rat. And he basically gives away his whole life when he's like, I hate losing money. 50 cents. That ain't good. We need more rats. He's like a racketeering guy.
Mm-hmm. What's cool is so many parts of this really do mirror how it was in that time.
Sure.
And, like, you know, just the fact that there were so many people out there, hey, this ticket was only to Chicago was only used once. Ooh, whoa, look, only once? That's amazing. You get this apple, get it before I eat it. And just, like, all of these trying to make money off of the, you know, fresh off the boat people. And, you know, yeah. You had definitely that happened all the time. And, you know, even later on, there's a story about how, you know, when Feifel is walking around, he's just walking around kind of lost, and he peers into this window, this little classroom. And that was actually a story that Steven Spielberg had remembered about his own grandfather telling him that the Jewish kids were only allowed to listen to the school lessons through the open windows while sitting outside in the snow. And that was, I think that was while in Russia.
That's tough.
Yeah. But that's, you know, that was just one of those things that they like brought into these, making it real, making it something that, you know, there weren't that many people who were still around who would remember this. They would remember their grandparents telling them this.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So this is where I started like watching the film and kept watching. I was like, golly, things are happening so fast. Like I got nothing. I can't tell what the story is going to be about because, it's opened up so many things. So evil rat, French bird trying to find his parents and trying to make it in America. And it's like, he's like, sure, I'll find your family. That he's like two floors below his family. Throws him into the workhouse and I'm like, oh crap. So the whole film it's going to be like I thought it was going to be like an Oliver Twist thing where he has to kind of rise up in the ranks of the orphan workers but no, he just gets out after about 2 minutes.
Easy.
Bible's like, well, I've had enough. Let's climb down.
Well, he's bringing in the fairy tale aspect of it. So this is something that I didn't catch until I ended up rewatching the beginning segment again after the whole thing. And then in the very beginning segment, he talks about the two fairy tales. One is Rapunzel and the second is the mouse, the giant mouse story.
Oh, the mink mouse of the mouse of Minx, or whatever.
Yeah. And so those he brings back as those are his saving graces through his trials. Which I thought was kind of a stretch, and I didn't really notice that until after and had watched it a second time.
All right, well, that makes sense. Okay, so we got the fairy tale aspect. So he tangles his way down the side of the building, but not before he picks up another annoying character, Domi!
Ugh.
Hey, Philly!
Yeah, he's like the guy from We're Back.
Where is he supposed to be from?
He's literally a mouse version of that kid from We're Back. He's
can't even remember his
name.
He's
from Philly, that kid. Tony. Oh, no, the kid from We're Back, yeah. Tony does very little to help things. Like, he pretty much gets mixed up with the Irish girl. And in a neck-break romance that totally outdid Disney. So that is something that Don Bluth did outdo Disney with this film.
Yeah, I mean, is that all it takes to get the girl? I mean, bam, love at first sight. And you know, normally guys like that, when girls like that, the guys have a hard time because she's way out of his league. But for some reason, she's into this guy, and I don't quite get it. But,
well, yeah. Everyone thinks that she's crazy. So maybe that made her a little desperate.
She's finally like, somebody likes me. Okay. Yeah.
It's like Meet the Robinsons. They all think I'm crazy. I think you're right. And she's like, oh, you'll be my husband. You know?
Yeah.
It was kind of one of those situations. But he didn't really care. He's just like, hey, let's all get together. You know, he's under his love spell. You know, mice. And,
Those two voices bothered me, though.
Oh, my gosh. Scene where they're like, they're like 5 second courtship.
I was just like, I don't get it. Yeah. No, but her voice also, she's like kind of Irish, but then not. Like, that bothered
I've never
me.
Been, I've never been, so I can't judge her accent, but it was kind of funky, wasn't it?
It was like only Irish on like a couple tilde things, and then it would go straight into like a normal American almost. Maybe she just has been there for a while, or she's second generation. I don't know. But yeah. Like his voice, it was like, okay, that the Bronx Brooklyn like accent didn't come for like 100 years the way you're doing it. And hers, it's like, no, you're not full Irish. Why are you? I don't get it. These are the things.
Hey, maybe she's half Irish. I just like Fievel's line, Tony, what's wrong with you?
It's true.
What was wrong with Tony? That guy was just, I don't know, typical tough guy. And
he's like the, yeah, like we mentioned, he's like the Dodger from Oliver and Company, or, you know, Oliver Twist mixed with the kid from We're Back.
No kidding. And then we're whisked away to another location. So we open up this new character who is, from what I can tell, he's like a corrupt, like, rat politician.
Honest
committing
John.
committing some good old mouse voter fraud with dead mice. There's as the lady said, there's a dead wat on the table.
Oh,
there's a dead
accent.
Mouse on the table. And then we got that lady. There's just so many new things so quickly in this film.
Maybe that's what it was when, you know, at this time, there were so many immigrants coming from different areas and places. You know, it was just a big hodgepodge of accents. We hadn't quite honed in on what became the norm.
But what is she? Is that supposed to be Asian?
I just think she has a speech impediment.
very well. All right. And so we're introduced to all these characters, and he doesn't know his parents because they don't vote, and that's it. And then the lady wants to have a wowie.
I think they just wanted an excuse to have a character that talks like that. See,
I would take an excuse to have a character talk like that. She was cool. I was okay with her voice.
She actually was awesome.
We have a plan, a secret weapon. The whole thing gets mixed up in this confrontation with the cats, and they're going to get their freedom. So it's a side plot to Fievel finding his family. So Fievel's kind of living with Tony and his girlfriend or whatever, and he has his Hey Mr. Moon song. That's what it was supposed to be, right? Before it was
Somewhere Out There.
Yeah, Somewhere Out There, yeah. Did you notice how the moon dramatically rises from below the horizon while he's singing?
I did.
But like noticed. 5 seconds, 5 seconds before that, the moon was like blatantly in the middle of the sky.
Hey, it's all about perspective.
They wanted to show off the animation, okay? Cool effects.
I totally get you. Maybe I'm just super proud of myself for pointing out a continuity error for once. The song wasn't very memorable to me, maybe because I don't like Fievel's little squeaky singing voice.
You know, I was surprised that they actually, you know, kept with it. They didn't get, you know, a Broadway actor, a Broadway performer to sing his voice and make it perfect. I mean, he was still squeaky.
Sean Connery.
He was still perfect in the fact that he was true to his character, and he wasn't on tune. He wasn't necessarily hitting those high notes. And,
don't,
you know, at
do
first
you think
I
that
was like,
just to lay the cuteness on, though?
I think
like,
so, but I think
on.
It works. I actually kind of liked it, and it might be distracting and annoying to some people, but I thought that they were very authentic in presenting the song.
Yeah, right. I saw it that way. I mean, definitely if I were looking at it as like listening in a soundtrack, it's kind of, it hits you off guard. You're like, yeah. But watching it in the movie, it works because it is him.
Yeah. So you got
to
give him credit for that.
Him.
And you got to give, you know, Don Bluth, Sullivan, whatever studios for, really trying to bring in the pathos with Fievel. Like, they really want you to, they're really trying to make him break your hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, they have to, because he's going to be their logo for the next 10 years.
That's true. So the sister doesn't really, besides being like the only mouse with common sense who's like, hey, I really think we should look for him, you know? They don't really expand on her character much. They expanded it a lot more in Fievel Goes West, which I appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
She gets caught up in a roadshow run by cats. And so there's that conflict.
Ooh.
Conflict.
Who's the girl you left behind? Da, 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 da. It's a great song.
Yeah.
I love how we're very much more into the sequel.
It was better. I'm sorry. Well, it was.
Yeah. I think a lot of parts from the sequel really expanded and improved on this first movie.
Yeah.
Well, because we were stuck with Fievel in this film. Like, we could visit the family here and there, but they chose this to be his story.
Right.
And so for the most part, we focused just on him. And the sister is an interesting character, surprisingly. But we don't explore that until the next film, which actually makes the next film better because she was kind of a character that you liked, but you didn't get that much time with her. And so we expand her in the second one.
Yeah, and that's a great move when you're making a sequel. And it was pretty smart of them, I guess, to not expand that much on her so they could. I mean, I'm sure they weren't making An American Tale with the thought in mind that they were going to make a sequel out of it. But it all worked out. I did like that they, in Fievel Goes West, they expanded on the sister.
Which Don Bluth had nothing to do with, FYI. He'll let you know.
FYI.
I did not. Yes.
He did not have anything to do with it. So they have this crazy plan to destroy the cats, and I would be extremely creeped out if one night I looked out my window and I just see a line of marching mice carrying candles into a shack, and I'm like, honey, we're moving out. We're gonna go stay in the country because this place is really freaky. very cool scene. And mice are quite the engineers, you know. They create a pretty well, it fooled the rest of the mice. Their robot replica of the Queen of England.
Yes.
And then they make this Godzilla mouse to scare away the cats, and pretty industrious.
They know what's up.
And hey, they did sew Cinderella's dress in like less than 5 hours.
For real, I need to get myself some mice helpers.
Leave the sewing to the women. You go get some trimming. It's one of my favorite things to say when Shanna's using her sewing machine.
Sure, she appreciates
I get a good
that.
Eye roll. I get a good eye roll out of it. So well, it's not like they forced the girl mice to sew.
Well, no, they're just saying, anyway. Okay, guys, you can't handle sharp objects. Leave it to us.
Okay, I guess that's what they were saying, yeah. So they're making this big, huge thing, and I love how all Fievel had to do was go with Tony into the shack and find his parents. But no, he's like, hey, what's that? Falls down a sewer, gets into even more trouble.
Well, yeah, at that... okay, here's a funny thing. When I'm listening to this, I hear the music, and I'm like, Morgan needs to pull out her violin. I want to hear Morgan's version
of
this song.
I mean, the violin, which I haven't touched in 10 years.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's going to sound great.
This is Carnegie Hall over there.
It's true.
Just pulled in too many directions.
Yeah.
Wasn't able to focus.
It's all right. We still have to make the Rotoscopers band.
It's going to be amazing. Though.
We have enough yodelers, harmonica players, violinists, guitarists, and budding hip-hop artists. That's me. to make a pretty solid group. Yeah! How many bands incorporate the Thunder Tube? All the hipster bands are going to copy us after this.
It's true. That and the theremin.
After our EP. Oh, the theremin is great.
I can pull in my melodic saw as well.
You have a what?
Woohoo!
My mom has a melodic saw.
A saw or, saw or a sock?
Saw. S-A-W.
Like a...
Yep. like a I'm saw? Cutting down a tree with this saw.
And it is imbued with melodic powers?
It is.
Sorcery.
It'll be a great band that we put together, that's for sure.
So what I want to know is, how did Tiger get mixed up with these marauders, Mott Street marauders? He's a vegetarian, and how does he get away with being the tough guy?
He's it's the not Bruce like... before there was Bruce.
Right, he is the Bruce before... I never knew my father. But that was a horrible Bruce. But anyway, but like, it's not like in the film they're like, oh, it's Tiger, the wussy cat. We have to put up with him, you know? It's not like the two-headed dragon, the reason that cousins shouldn't marry, from Quest for Camelot. They're like outcast dragons that no one likes. It's not like Tiger's the guy that no one likes. They're not like, oh, Tiger, you screwed up again, you know? He's a regular guy.
It's true.
So it's totally unexpected. It's totally surprising when we find out that he's a vegetarian cat.
I love the part where he's like, do you know what I love? I love broccoli!
That's right.
This is like a public service announcement right there. Kids.
Brought to you by Dom DeLuise.
It was the 80s.
It's true.
Yeah, they were trying to brainwash kids back then. In a lot less subtle ways, at least. But yeah, the blatant vegetable PSAs. Dom DeLuise is so great.
It is, yeah.
He'll always be my Kusama Goopa Goop from Dexter's Lab.
I wish they would have put him into the story sooner. Like I said before, like the entire time, I'm like, when are they bringing Tiger into this whole thing?
I hate to keep bringing up the sequel, but he is a big deal in the sequel.
He's
hanging around with them time.
Yeah. Well, I think they realized how successful of a character he was.
Right.
Yeah, we should just do the sequel next episode.
We're gonna have Don DeLuise month. So we find out, this is so creative / weird. So we find out that Warren T. Rat is actually moonlighting as a rat because he's actually a cat.
He's not a rat. He's a cat.
It's pretty ingenious, though.
Yeah. It's like, never mind the nose. What are you going to believe? My word or your own eyes?
Were they really fooled by... I mean, is he a really small cat or are they just really stupid?
He must be one of those low on brawn, high on brains kind of guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's the ringleader. See? Yeah, see?
He was getting a lot of money for doing nothing.
Give me all your money and the kid. And no one gets hurt. And then he's like, all right. Cats don't want to pay me. I'm going to burn them all down. Very sinister. I like how it just has a match on him. There was this like super tedious moment where they're trying to unleash their secret weapon. The lady has to give the signal like 3 times.
She does it too early. She does it too. Yeah.
And they're like, not till the ship horn. And then the ships are, everybody's panicking because the ship is already sailing. This whole time I'm like, ugh, it's apparently bad that the ship is moving away from the dock. But why is it bad? What's its game? What part does the ship have? But I'm panicking anyway.
You know, at this point in time when the giant mouse comes out, I honestly thought I was watching a Bakshi film. Like, just how they animated everything there. Yeah, total rotoscoped in there. I was like, what is this?
It was a bit bizarre. It felt out of place.
Mm-hmm.
How else?
But then
do
I was like, maybe it's just Don Bluth doing his dazzle again and, you know, shrouding it in filters.
Don Bluth dazzle. How else are you going to animate a giant, like, 3-story devil rat?
And I guess it's supposed to be, like, yeah, super, super scary. And that definitely does not make it look anywhere close to warm and cuddly. So, yeah, I guess that would be a good good use of the Bakshi style. But
the Bakshi style, that's yeah.
Just, hey, I say that, you know exactly what I mean.
I'm getting post-traumatic stress from watching The Lord of the Rings. we gotta rewatch that. Anyway,
No, we don't.
Okay.
So just Mason and I.
So they just aim them down the dock and they just chase him and. I like how the cats are like, I can't swim, let's grab onto this anchor. You know, and it's like, hey, you can jump from the anchor back on the docks. But no, they're headed for Hong Kong. He's like, there's plenty of rats in Hong Kong. Hey, I wonder how you say trust me in Chinese. And that dumb cockroach of his.
Yeah, that was a bit unnecessary, I thought.
Who's worse, chicken axe thing or
let me just stop you right there. Chicken axe thing.
Okay, so the roach, the electrical roach bookie, who's kind of like that bat from Fern Gully, who's got like a thing, static electricity problem going on. He really needs to ground himself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we got all that. But it's like, I don't know, I thought it was interesting how the bad guy gets defeated, but he doesn't die or get imprisoned or get chased off forever like Captain Hook. He just lives to see another day and he goes off to spread his depravity to another part of the world.
You know what? And I believe him. I believe that he's going to be successful over there.
He is going to do just fine in Hong Kong.
But the thing is, it's cool. He's not bothering us anymore. He's their problem.
Yeah, it's like, okay, this side plot is over. Now we really need to make Fievel hit rock bottom for about 10 minutes.
Wait, well, 1 second. Go back just a sec.
Okay, okay.
In Hong Kong, didn't they bring in cats to get rid of the mice, and then now there's no mice in Hong Kong?
Oh, so maybe that's historical.
Yeah, I thought that's kind of what the joke was. Or maybe, was this supposed to be before that happened or after that happened? Because either way, it would be kind of funny.
Or
as it happened.
Yeah, or as it happened.
Yeah, totally.
That's how the cats made it to Hong Kong.
Yeah. Totally. And then there is a whole island of rabbits in Japan. It's adorable.
Well. It's adorable.
But diseases everywhere.
Bunnies!
Wild Nidoran! They're everywhere! Anyway, so this is where I really got a problem with the pacing of the film. It's like, okay, bad guys defeated, Fievel or Philly single-handedly saved all of mouse kind in New York. He's the hero. and you're still gonna push this whole orphan thing? Like, that would be the perfect time to reunite him with his family. End on a huge crescendo, wrap it up, let's go home. But no, for like 15 minutes more, Fievel is like wandering around because of some misunderstanding. He misses his parents by like by 3 feet. And then he has to go live with mean old bully orphan kids for a while. And then boom, they just find him.
Yeah, I'm like, why didn't they? I mean, it wouldn't have worked out, but doesn't it seem like the island of misfit orphans is the first place you go when you're missing a kid? Thousands of them. But no, he wasn't there, so it wouldn't have mattered anyway.
It was a good reuniting scene, though.
Were you not disturbed at all, the fact that there's just all these, like, orphans living there?
Who cares about them? It's Fievel that we care about. It's so horrible.
Oh, but this is the part that I thought was really funny, is they have the whole, you know, one of those Don Bluth effects is, like, the haze around.
Yes.
To be able to signify that this is a very tender moment, and you have to pay attention.
Haze.
Yes, the dreamy haze of everything is all better, and this is what we've all been dreaming about until this moment. So, but here's something. Where in the world is the little, like, baby? At the very beginning of this movie, they had a
baby. Dude.
What?
You're so right.
And then in the sequel, the baby's there,
too. Totally gone.
He was at the babysitter the whole time.
It's like they hired him.
Too much. It's too hard to animate babies.
Yeah, they get, what accent was that? They get off the boat.
That was just Morgan's
like...
accent.
Okay. All right. Your accentual accent. Yeah, they get off the boat and everyone's like, all the opportunists are like selling their stuff and trying to get a buck out of these immigrants. And one of them was like, babysitting 25 cents a day. They're like, oh, sounds like a good deal, because they're Italian now. And so that's where the baby went for a while. Luckily, they got her back. Him, her.
It was her, I believe.
Yeah. Anyway, there's plenty of Don Bluth dazzle there in the ending, you know, the tenderness.
Uh-huh.
And then they make it so heartwarming between Fievel and his dad, you know. But at the same time, the dad was just kind of like, he was very eager to accept that Fievel was gone, and everyone should have listened to the sister. The sister was a real hero in this film, and Fievel.
Yeah, but I think about it, would you, if your son, child, brother was lost at sea, I would have a difficult time thinking that he made it.
You would need space. You would need time. Probably in denial, you know, first of the five stages. All right. Well, maybe I'm being too hard on it, but it just seemed kind of weird, his writing.
I liked when they reunited with the family, but at the very end when they're riding on the bird and talking, and I'm just like, at this point, I was ready for it to be over.
Tiger's going along too.
I was like, let's just end this. It's dragging this out. I thought, like, this last bit after being reunited sort of drew it out a bit.
I thought so too. Yeah. But
well, and then you get the crazy wink of the Statue of Liberty, and I'm like, what?
I didn't see that.
What?
I watched.
Yeah, I winked.
I rented it on Amazon.
And I
saw
it. Maybe rented
because
it.
So did I.
I don't remember the Statue of Liberty winking. Maybe because I saw it in standard definition and I missed out on that.
I also saw it in standard definition.
It winked.
All right. Cheapos for the win. Yeah. is there a Blu-ray for American Tail?
Yes, yeah. There is. Just recently came out.
I'm starting to be a Blu-ray fanatic, I tell you what.
Oh, Blu-ray's a bomb.
Or Super HD as Hulu and Netflix calls it.
Oh, gosh.
Super HD, Morgan. Super HD. It's more than HD. It supersedes HD. It is superb over... It is supervisor over HD. Super HD. This has been a Super HD public service announcement. Now return to your regularly scheduled podcast. So the ending was sweet, but I didn't get the whole flying thing at the end.
They were like, how do we end this? Let him fly on that bird.
Give him the wink and the gun. Good job,
wink
kid.
Wink and the gun. Yep. Isn't there a part where Fievel and his sister turn around and, like, wave to the camera at the end?
No, I thought they waved at the statue. Or they just acknowledged that they both saw the statue. Wink.
Oh, okay. That was it. Okay. I got to go back and watch that whole statue scene again. Yeah.
All right. So what did we think about this? What are we rating it? Or is there something that you would change about this to make it better?
I think I've criticized the film enough to where I can't make any suggestions for Don Bluth.
It was a little long at parts. It was just disjointed in a lot of areas. And it wasn't as good a secret in him. Let's just say that. But they did a good job at kind of bringing in the realness of the time period. And I felt like it was good. I give it 3 stars. Can't go any much higher. 3 stars. But that's where I'm going to give it. Like, just as much effort as he puts into it. And the story itself was good. And there was a, bit of a heartwarming moment there with the fogginess around the silhouettes as they reunite and everything. But it was good.
I'm going to give this 3 stars as well. I wasn't really enamored with this movie, and now I kind of know why I didn't watch it that much growing up. It just, it was cool, and I enjoyed myself as I was watching this, and I liked the narrative. I liked the different pacing that they did with this, and the characters that we met a lot of characters, which mm-hmm. can be overwhelming, but I thought it was kind of cool because it was totally like the day in the life of a lost kid. And like Chelsea said, I liked the cultural references and the references to actual historical events. And I thought it was very well done. But it wasn't a masterpiece. It wasn't something that was just like super engaging. While it was interesting, I just gave it 3 stars.
All right. Don't hate on me. I'm going to give it 2.5 stars. Yeah, like Morgan said, I don't really consider American Tale a masterpiece, but it does have some good points. Like, you can always count on Don Bluth to make a family oriented film. And that's really cool. And, it's got the strong emphasis on, finding your family, finding your dream. And then the excellent, the classic production quality of a Don Bluth film, having all that effort go into the animation and the design and the Don Bluth dazzle, his little effects that he made. I really like it for that. I had a lot of problems with, the structure of the story, the plot. And, it just seemed like it kind of raced from one situation to another. It was cool that it included all of this, but it didn't spend enough time on each one. I guess the part that surprised me the most was his like instant escape from the like workhouse for the orphans when he runs into a warranty rat. I mean, he literally got out after 5 minutes. So it kind of lost its impact, although the general impact of the film and his character arc is that he goes through all these dangerous situations and somehow gets out of them. And so this is a film that has all the classic ingredients of a Don Bluth film. The whole thing just didn't click together like I expected it to, I guess. And I don't know. I think a big difference was that in my rating was that I didn't grow up watching this. So I don't have that nostalgia handicap, as it were, for this film.
And that nostalgia adds a lot.
Well, I wonder if people who have seen it for the first time now have the same love for it as people who grew up watching it. Uh-huh. My hypothesis is that they don't.
No, I don't think they would.
My hypothesis is anyone who doesn't grow up watching a movie doesn't have the same affinity.
It's true.
Unless it's My Little Pony. That is just a cultural phenomenon that I will never wrap my head around. And
new My Little Pony is awesome. The old My Little Pony I got to review. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. What were they on? I am struggling to even get through one episode. It is so bad.
Narratively. So what is worse? What is worse? Old My Little Pony or old Care Bears?
Ooh. I haven't seen Care Bears compare, but I don't think
probably just as bad.
I don't think anything can top this. How bad this My Little Pony show is.
Were they competing franchises?
One was. Anyways, we should do.
We need to do 80s and 90s cartoons after this for a Nerdy Couch discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
Ah, this is America, the place to find the hope. If you give up, you will never find your family. So, never. Say never. Say never. Say never. Whatever you do, never.
Okay, so we're moving on to our mailbag. Our first one is a review of An American Tale by Joshua K. He says, An American Tale, the movie that gave us Jewish mice and a questionable sequel idea. Though I have not seen the movie yet, I still hear it's good. What? You're reviewing a movie you haven't heard, you haven't seen. So I barely anything to talk about, but I heard it's one of his best. I actually think I saw the sequel. That's right. I haven't seen the first one, but I think I saw the sequel. Anyway, I don't have any rating at this time, but I heard it's good. Anyways, just wanted to waste your time with stuff from someone who hasn't seen the movie. Also, I have a question for you. Would you consider a robot or toys series soon? Think about it. You haven't done the finale of Toy Story yet. Anyways, oops. I'm out, and you guys rule. Joshua K.
Oh, thank you, Joshua. And you did an impeccable job wasting our time with someone who hadn't seen the movie. I'm just kidding. Yeah, bring up a good point. The Jewish mice thing is funny. And then questionable sequel idea. I think it's questionable because it's so different. But at the same time, it's still this kind of immigration story, you know, finding freedom. I'm a big proponent of the West. So robot or toy series. So that way we could see the movie Robots. That was Blue Sky.
Yeah.
And a toy series. I hope you're not meaning Small Soldiers, because that movie was terrible.
Ooh. No gracias.
No bueno. Yeah, but you bring up a good point, Joshua. We definitely need to do Toy Story 3. I'm pretty sure we have writers who are like chomping at the bits for a taste of that episode. In fact, I can think of about 8 of our writers who would like to be on that episode. We should just have a mega episode for Toy Story 3 where there's like 16 people just talking at once.
Everyone talking over each other.
Chaos. I love it. Here's a piece of mail from Sarah. She says, hello, Rotoscopers. I'm excited that you guys are doing An American Tale because it was one of my favorite movies growing up. Mm-hmm. I just want to share this video I found on YouTube. It's a music video of An American Tale featuring the Michael Bolton version of Go the Distance from Hercules. Wow, that's pretty cool. It's actually really creative. It's a mashup, man. Fievel can go the distance. And he does go the distance. Yeah, that's really cool, Sarah. I want to see more mashups like that.
All right, our next one is from Dan, Dan Siciliano, as he says, hey, Rotoscopers, Dan here. Just listened to the podcast episode which focuses on the Great Mouse Detective and heard about many of the animated mice and rats that you thought of. But no offense, you seem to be missing a few mice and rats. Actually, 4 rats and 1 mouse. Let's start with the rats.
Here we're being schooled.
That's how we roll. 2 of them are from Chicken Run, Nick and Fetcher. You know those 2 scrounger rats who want to get eggs and payments for every time that they steal a tool from the chickens? These guys are so funny and underrated. And I quote, in the quiet, likely event of an emergency, put your head between your knees and kiss your bum goodbye. LOL. And there's Ratty from The Adventures of Ichabod Crane and Mr. Toad. You know, the water rat from Kenneth Graham's Wind in the Willows. Ratty and Molly, Toad's pair of friends. Now, Ratty doesn't have the tail, if you've seen the film, but he has a look of this combination of a rat and I think a chipmunk, I think. Stuffy, but quite a fine fellow. Well, good. And the 4th rat is a creepy rat before Ratigan, the rat from Lady and the Tramp. He doesn't have a voice in this film, and nor does he have a name, but he is quite disturbing and creepy, especially in the end. And his size makes me feel that the rat must be this beaver evil twin brother. He and the movie makes me and the baby cry. Now the mouse. Now the mouse I have to mention is from Disney's featurette that I grew up with and I think has never heard before, but Ben and Me. It centers around Amos Mouse, who has written documents that he was responsible for the idea that made Benjamin Franklin famous. I think I have seen that one. If you've seen the film, you might see some of the comparisons to other Disney films. Amos looks like one of the mice from Cinderella, and the rest of the human characters, especially Ben, look exactly like the human characters from Peter Pan. Ben actually looks more like Mr. Smee, if you know what I mean. Amos also was the voice of Sterling Holloway, the man behind Winnie the Pooh, and another animated mouse, Rotford from The Aristocats. Well, that's all I gotta say, and I can't wait for more episodes involving mice and rats. Cheers, Dan Siciliano. Thanks, Dan.
All right, and our next one is from the Netherlands. Says, hey guys, listener from the Netherlands here. I've been completely addicted to podcasts recently, and since I love animation, I'm glad I found yours a while back. I have lots of artist friends online, but sadly most of them live far away. So listening to your podcast feels a bit like hanging out and chatting about things I like. So thank you for sharing your joy with the rest of us. I was just listening to your episode about the Great Mouse Detective, and actually got up out of bed to type this before I'd forget. Yes, that's awesome. Which happens to be one of my all-time favorite movies. The funny thing is that being 24, I grew up with this character, but I didn't actually see the movie until 2007. I don't know if you guys were aware, but here in Europe, Disney comics are still hugely popular. And Basil happens to be one of the characters about whom comics still get published in the Netherlands to this day. Your talk about how the movie has an open ending reminded me of these stories. Basil is
not one of the most popular characters here, but according to Index, a database of all Disney comics ever created, a must-see if you're into that kind of stuff, here's the link, he appeared in 96 comics to date, of which the majority are shorter comics that have been written and published in the Netherlands. Several years ago, I scanned a bunch of these comics, so I've attached them in a link at the bottom of the mail. I'm sorry they're in Dutch, but they're really fun to look at just for the art alone. Since I'm talking about Disney Dutch comics anyway, you might find it interesting that aside from the obvious characters, Donald and Scrooge, some of the most popular characters here are Brer Rabbit, the Big Bad Wolf, Bucky Bug, Ponchito, and Little Hiawatha. He has appeared in well over 600 comics, of which 300 to 400 were made in the Netherlands. I always love seeing how each country has their own popular characters, and since Disney comics are sadly not being made anymore in the States, I thought this would be an interesting discussion for people who enjoy the movies which these characters originated from. Don't even get me started on the popularity of Donald Duck in countries like Italy, the Netherlands, and especially Scandinavia. Anyway, I'll stop my attempt at not so subtly changing the subject from animation to comics. I'm looking forward to the upcoming podcast and the big backlog I still get to listen to. Greetings, Heinrich.
Hey, well, danke, Heinrich. I had no idea that Disney comics were so big over there.
Neither did I.
And that Little Hiawatha is so big over there.
Yeah, that was the one that I was like, really?
So I'll include that link in the show notes so you guys can check out some of those Dutch comics. There's really a ton of them, and they're really, really, really cool. So definitely check them out. And the art, like Heinrich said, is awesome.
Hi, guys. It's Gemma. I've been suffering from a cold, flu-y kind of thing for about 3 weeks now, which is why my voice is weird. But I thought I had to do a voicemail for An American Tale. I was really excited about it. But now I think about it, I don't know why I liked this film so much. It's not amazing. It's quite dark, quite morbid. It can sometimes be a little cloying with its sentimental moments. But I'm just really attached to it. I've loved it since I was a kid, and probably more when I was a teenager. It might be because it's not afraid to be dark. It's not afraid to be morbid. It's not afraid to have a whole scene with the main character, you know, moping around feeling sorry for himself over some classical music. So I guess I admire it for that. Oh, who am I kidding? Let me get to the two things that I love the most about this film that have stayed with me for this long. The first is Tony. Tony Topongi. He is on screen for a total amount of about 5 minutes, and I love every second, and I don't know why. I love Tony so much. He is hands down one of my favorite supporting characters in any animated film ever, and I don't know why. I love him so much. And the other thing I love is Somewhere Out There, of course. It is in my top 5 favorite songs of all time, and being so into music and loving a lot of songs, pretty damn special to me. So those are the two things I love about it, but in the end, overall, I guess I don't like it as much as I did before. Maybe I do. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. And I must ask before I go, will you be putting the Mike and Matt series on hold to do an episode on Big Hero 6? Not like I'll be able to listen to it. It's not released until January here, so I have to hide from the internet for 2 months. And I know you haven't been doing crazy coverage on it like Frozen last year, but it's Disney. Thought we could do a big Disney podcast again. But it's your choice anyway. Okay, I'm gonna stop talking now. Keep up the fantastic job, guys.
Wow, Gemma. I'm really glad that you're such a big fan of Tony. I mean, we kind of gave him a hard time during this whole thing, but the fact that he has some follower fans out there makes me really happy. And then also, to answer your question about the Big Hero 6, unfortunately, we will not be doing an episode devoted to Big Hero 6 as of yet. We're not exactly sure when we will do one, but I'm sure we will because we all loved it. So definitely that's going to be on our list of movies to talk about at some point. We just don't know when. This one is from Hannah, and she says, "Hey, Rotoscopers, I'm an animation student who found your site a couple months ago. I love the show, and I love that it allows me to add animation to the non-animation parts of my day, namely my job. I just listened to your podcast about The Great Mouse Detective. A few years back, a couple of friends and I were talking about this movie and how much we loved the song, 'Let Me Be Good to You.' So we looked it up on YouTube and watched it again. Well, we were a little shocked at how blatantly suggestive it was. I've got to admit, though, it's still a catchy song. I'm excited that you are reviewing An American Tale. Good movie. I always love quoting the rich lady mouse when she says, "We wish the secret weapon." And I cannot wait for the Ratatouille podcast. I can't pinpoint why, but that's probably my favorite Pixar movie. Also, I agree that you should have a special space-themed group of podcasts because I want you to do Titan AE. Until then, I still have 60-plus podcasts to tide me over. Thank you for making these, Hannah. Thanks, Hannah.
All right, last but certainly not least, this last piece of mail is from our very good fan and friend, Drew. He says, "Hey, Rotoscopers, my name is Drew. I'm 13 years old and I live in Utah. I'm also a fairly new fan of your podcast. I like to listen to episodes while I draw, paint, or animate things of my own. Great job and keep up the good work." Hey, thanks, Drew.
Nice.
Awesome.
Drew, if you're listening to this, then you should show us some of the stuff that you draw or paint or animate. That'd be cool.
"I can tell we got an awful lot in common. Even though we look as different as can be, we don't even have to try to see things eye to eye. It just comes to us naturally. Come to think of it, I think..."
All right, thank you guys for sending in those emails. We love when people send emails so we can hear other fans and animation addicts just like us. So if you have an email you want to send us to talk about a future movie that we're doing, maybe you have a favorite mouse from animation or rat, or just to talk about things that we've mentioned in the past, send us an email at contact@rotoscopers.com. What a great episode. This was awesome, guys.
We've officially finished the Amblimation movies. Besides Fievel Goes West.
Oh, yes.
There's actually a couple more if you're going to be counting the sequels to this.
Treasure of Manhattan Island. Let me guess. There's a character who shows like Long Drawn Silver. Well, there was an American Tales cartoon series, and then there's a Back to the Future animated series that Amblimation produced.
For the sake of the podcast, I think we're done.
Another Don Bluth episode in our Don Bluth tool belt, and we really love those Don Bluth films.
We don't have very many,
but they're so polarizing, though. You know.
It's like
we love them, but we also have a lot to say about what went wrong. Anyway.
So if you're on social media and you want to tweet about this episode, be sure to use the hashtag AnimAddicts, and specifically to talk about this episode and your thoughts on An American Tale, hashtag AnimAddicts78. And for show notes for this episode, you can go to rotoscopers.com/78. That's where you can find all the links, all the show notes, all the fun goodies that you can't, you know, get through the airwaves. So definitely go check that out. And be sure to comment down below. So that is where we congregate and all the hosts go and we talk about the episode and other people go and they give their thoughts on the episode. And is there like a specific question that we want people to discuss? Like, just give me your thoughts if this is one of your favorite Don Bluth films, why or why not? I think that'd be kind of interesting and how this relates to your nostalgia facts. That's been one of my favorite things recently is people go and they say different things from their childhood and their memories about the film.
How about this? When you hear this, when this episode is released, if you liked the American Tale, but you did not grow up watching this, so you don't have the nostalgia factor, but you love the film anyway, then let us know, at Rotoscopers, and then use the hashtag AnimAddicts, because I want to meet you people. Are there hardcore fans of this movie that did not grow up watching it and don't have the nostalgia factor is what I'm looking for.
Sounds good. You can also catch the podcast on Hypeable and Animated Views. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. That's one way the more subscribers we have, more people are able to find it because it shows that, hey, to iTunes, hey, this is actually a pretty credible site.
We're popular.
They're cool. So we get some rankings, and we also, if you leave a comment or a review, that's another way to show your support for the show. Really easy, free, just give us your thoughts, and that way other people who are maybe on the fence about the show can see your amazing review and say, you know what, I'm going to try that out, and they're going to be hooked for life. That's our plan, at least. You can also find us on Stitcher Radio. Again, for emails, you send us an email at contact@rotoscopers.com or voicemail. We love hearing your voices, so send
a voicemail to rotoscopers.com/voicemails, or you can call in on your phone at 406-646-6575.
Voicemails are awesome.
Voicemails are amazing.
You can also support the show by going to rotoscopers.com/Amazon. That's our affiliate link. So any shopping that you have to do, the Christmas season is coming, and use our link, and we appreciate it so, so much. And yeah. If you're interested in listening to audiobooks, go to rotoscopers.com/audible, and you can get a free book there. Very cool stuff. And, of course, the very best way of supporting the show is the Rotoscopers t-shirt. You can go to rotoscopers.com/store, and you can buy your own t-shirt there. So lots of good, good stuff.
Morgan's just been rattling through these. Man, she's good.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, the Roto shirt is amazing.
It is.
We all have our Roto shirts, and they're super comfy, and they're, like, really well made. And I just love mine. I wear it all the time.
Do you wear it to school?
Yeah, well, I wear it to sleep, and then I don't shower, and then I wear it to school. And then people, like, look at me funny because I'm all disheveled. I'm like, oh, I see you're looking at my Rotoscopers t-shirt. And they're like, no, I'm just looking at how disheveled and unkempt you are. Hey, I'm like, well, I'll tell you about the Roto shirt.
You are not giving a very good view of the Rotoscopers.
Oh,
shame.
Man. Do I need to clean my act up?
Clean up your act, dude.
All right. Jeez. Sorry, Chelsea.
If you want to get in touch with any of us, you can head on over to Twitter. Morgan's there. You can check out Morgan Stradling on Twitter. I'm on Twitter, Chelsea Robson, and of course Mason SMTX. You can also check out his portfolio at masonsmithportfolio.com.
Yeah, I'm going to post a gallery of my Inktober stuff.
I haven't seen those are cool.
Ah, shucks. And then also on my derelict animation blog, thisanimatedlife.blogspot.com, I wrote a few a couple weeks back, some of our Twitter followers suggested some movies, animated movies I should watch because I hadn't seen them yet. And so I watched them, and then I wrote little mini reviews, just my thoughts on the films. And so it's starting to cultivate, starting to come together. So, yeah.
Also, our next episode, I know we kind of broke the mold with last episode, and we had a surprise Halloween episode, but we just couldn't help ourselves. But now we're back on track with our Mice and Rats series. So our next one is actually going to be Pixar's Ratatouille. Chelsea's dream, Mice in the Kitchen.
Brant's Rat.
Also known as Brant's Rat to Mason.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Or until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
We should rename the podcast to Bluth's Buttes.
Bluth's Buttes. Awesome.
Because like we're all beautiful. Beauties. Yeah.
Bob's Beauties.
Yeah, pretty much.
Mason, did you know that I actually calculated it and made it work out so that my senior year, I wouldn't have to start school until after Price is Right?
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know you were such a fan.
Every day I watch Price is Right.
Oh, my God. How did you feel about Drew Carey?
Meh. I wasn't a fan.
Oh, well. Anyway. I just like watching people's reactions on that show.
I actually yodeled for Bob Barker. Little
That's crazy.
Anyway, back to the show.
We need an episode where all we do is talk about all the cool things that Chelsea's done. Met Alice Cooper, what you just said about yodeling, knowing how to yodel for that matter. All that stuff.
Sorry, I've been talking this whole time, and Mason totally interrupted me, and I was like, delay? Rude.
Not again.
And of course, again, I was on mute.
About to get another demerit.
That's where, you know, usually we all go, and we kind of conglomerate there so we can... Conglomerate? What? Is that even a word? Congregate.
Collaborate? Congregate?
Congregate.
A conglomeration is a gathering of... I mean, it's like all the things within
it. Yeah.
You're a business major. You should know what a conglomerate is.
I know what a conglomerate is, but to conglomerate in the term of...
as a verb or instead of a noun?
Yeah, I verbed it.
I verbed that.
I'll try this again.
All right, let's end this. I'm tired and I want to watch The Walking Dead. Telling it like it is.